Oh, Dolly. Reminiscing about what it used to be like when you worked from 9 to 5. Do you remember those days? I can't remember those days. No one can get away with working 9 to 5 these days, it seems. There's always extracurricular activities. There's messages on your phone you have to check, emails outside of work hours. It's a 24/7 world, let's be honest. Monday 9 to 5 work pattern is becoming less and less common, and shops are open longer hours. Do you remember that special, was it Friday night, late night shopping? That was it. That's a thing of the past now. Shops are just open, mostly. There's even footy now on Thursday nights. We work, we socialise, and we shop in an increasingly 24/7 world. So what does that leave, that thing called work-life balance? Dan Woodman is a straight-talking professor of sociology who's exploring what it means to live in the 24/7 world. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Miff, and hi, Zan. I love to be introduced as a straight-talking professor. Yeah. It makes me think that maybe I'm a bit like Dolly Parton.
Oh, you
are. Tell it like it is.
Tell it like it is, Dan. We're looking forward to that. And also broadcaster Zan Rowe, who is a 24-hour working/party person. I don't know how she fits it all in. We're going to examine what this means for our lives and our relationships. Now, if Dolly Parton wrote that song today, I might start with you, Zan. What do you reckon that title would be?
Well, 24/7. It would, like, this is the thing. I was still so surprised when businesses close at 5 or 4 or 4:30, like banks. It's just like, I still don't know how banks get away with opening at 9:30 and closing at 4:30.
Yeah.
But this is, it's not a world that exists, and I still find it weird. And I know there's plenty of people who clock in and clock out right on the knocker of 9 and 5, and you definitely see that rush towards the train. But no one that I know has any kind of, I guess, boundaries in their work life. It all minces. And maybe that's because I'm quite privileged to work in a creative field where you work and how you play often kind of blend together. But it's, my days pretty much start with, this is what I've got to do today, and I'll leave when it's done. And some days I'm lucky and I get out a little bit early, but for the most part I'm getting out after the sun's gone down.
Yeah. What about you, Dan? How do you feel about that? What would 9 to 5 the song be called these days?
Well, that song was part of the almost as famous 9 to 5 movie, where Dolly and Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda were fighting the good fight for flexibility at work, basically. You know, they had the misogynist boss, but also the boss who wouldn't give any flexibility. So they kidnapped the boss. And I'm happy to say that you can get flexibility at work most of the time without having to kidnap your boss these days. But I guess she'd probably write a song about, you know, juggling the flexible work timetables of her partner, her kids' school sports, trying to get to daycare to pick up the kids on time. And that's not a great song title, so
no.
I'd leave that to the experts. But that'd be the theme, I think.
Working all the time,
yeah.
I think, is what it would be called these days. Flexible hours, this is something that comes up all the time. There are positives and negatives to flexible hours. I imagine some of the positives are increased motivation. You feel respected by your boss or your organisation, so, and they agree to your terms. But quite often corporations don't want to give people flexible hours. Do you have any idea, Dan, why that might be?
Well, one thing I will say is that the businesses have somewhat come to the table, and also there's legislation now where more and more of us, if you have any caring responsibilities, really, can at least ask for flexible hours. But workplaces don't need to give it to you. I guess they think that some people still want to be able to keep an eye on you and see that you're sitting at that desk from 9 to 5. Or unfortunately, like the way that work's really changed is not so much there's a heap more of us doing shifts overnight, but that the 9 to 5 doesn't look like 9 to 5. It's 7 to 4, 7 to 6, you know, 11 to 8. So we're kind of all still kind of circulating around that 9 to 5 period, but there's a lot of flexibility on either side, and more the job follows us home as well. So people picking up bits and pieces of either a second job or just their main job at home using their smartphone and things like that.
side hustles. That's where the work-life balance has gone out the window. We're all supposed to have side hustles as well. What are we creating here with this 24/7 world? Trying to be superhuman, or do you think it is more adaptable to this new way of living?
I reckon that it's about always making sure that there's something to go to. The side hustle is a really key point. It's very, you know, it's increasingly common that you are going to have lots of different jobs and maybe even multiple careers in your life. Gone are the days of the 30 to 40 year job at the one place and the gold watch at the end of retirement. And so the workforce today, and particularly the younger workforce, are always aware that they're just one step away from losing that. Lots of eggs in lots of baskets is what you're always thinking of. Always pitching, always pushing, always letting people know that you're out there. And that outward, and particularly with social media and how ingrained that is in all of our lives, whether it's a professional or a personal pursuit, just constantly showing the world that you're doing. And by doing, you have to do, or at least you have to pretend to do, which is doing itself, you know, and then you're checking back to see how people are reacting to you. Just this constant outward public face of performing, and it's quite exhausting. I mean, I'm not sure whether this is, I come from a really specific, perspective, because I do am a public person and I'm talking about what I'm doing and try to encourage people to come to hear my stories and the stories that I'm sharing. But I feel like a lot of people, particularly younger people, are just in this constant phase of pitching themselves and selling themselves, even in their, you know, who they are in the world. And so it's just this, like, it's almost a work ethic in our private lives as well, Miff. Don't you think, Dan?
Yes. So that's it. Like, there's lots of people doing side hustles, and it's for some people, it's simply they got to do it to make ends meet. And for a lot of other people, it's kind of keeping some doors open and keeping some future options open. So a lot of people who are pursuing creative pursuits, it's very tough to make that your 9-to-5 gig, so to speak. So lots of people pursue that on the side or on the weekends at nights, and often hoping that it might build over time.
I think too, Zan, you referenced something that's really interesting about now, as in the personal is part of your brand.
Brand, what a word.
In photographs that people post online in that social media world, it's not just 24/7 in terms of the work that people are expected to do, but you've got to put on a good face in your private time as well, because it could be captured on a phone, whereas, you know, 20 years ago we could go out and do anything and no one knew any better or worse of what we did.
I miss the days of tracky dacks and Ugg boots going down to the shops. I miss them terribly.
So this 24/7 world, and I'm talking to Dan Woodman, who's a professor of sociology, and also Zanro, who's a broadcaster at Double J, does a podcast with me, Bang On, and it's delightful. Everyone's very busy. Is this 24/7 work world, is it going to benefit us eventually, or are we simply creating more work for ourselves and less ability to compartmentalise parts of our working life?
I think that without the limitations that others give us, we need to work hard and be on the front foot to create limitations for ourselves. And I think that we fail at that miserably because we don't know what's around the corner, because we fear it and because we don't have, sometimes, you know, it's that simple thing of being given direction that we really just follow. So if the shops are open from 9 to 5, that's it. I've got to get what I need done in the time that it's available to me. If the work office shuts down and security, the alarm goes on at a certain time, then you've got to be out. When you take away all of those things, and even more in a kind of lateral sense too, unless you're able to step up and create those own limitations for yourself, you really run the risk of running yourself ragged. And that sense of just always being on, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, if you're physically working or at home working on something, just if you switched on, the mental exhaustion from that can be really felt. And I think it's something that we don't realise, because it's not a physical exhaustion, but you don't realise it until you have a break and you realise just how on you've been. And being able to switch off, being able to log off, switch off, turn off and get out of that brain space is so important in order to have a long life, but also to think creatively. And when I say think creatively, I'm not talking about creative people. We all think creatively. Bankers think creatively. You know, building site workers on the job think creatively. We all have a creative mind. And unless we get a chance to kind of reset that and reboot and give ourselves a break, that really suffers, I reckon.
Dan, you're a sociologist of generations. Is there a generational difference at play here?
Well, so I have some research where I follow people through their 20s to see how they manage all these pressures. And what's really struck me is it's finding, Zan was talking about finding time to kind of check out of this being constantly on. One of the big challenges people find is getting your life to synchronize with the lives of others that matter. When everybody's timetables and schedules shift around, then somebody's got to do that work of kind of blocking in that time where you can not be just sitting by yourself, but do something fun with your significant others, maybe your friends or family. And what's really, really struck me about my participants in my study is they have things on their smartphones where their group of close girlfriends, often the boys don't seem to do this as much, we'll all share an online calendar and 2 months ahead be kind of blocking in a day, saying, let's try keep that free. And again, it tends to be the women more than the men, whatever else might have changed. But in partnerships, in couples, where two people are not doing the 9 to 5, there's this work of getting your lives to kind of work in the same rhythm at points so that you can, you know, have a relationship. And those are new tasks that people haven't had to do quite so much in the past, and they're things we have new tools to do, but they're still a kind of new job for people.
Yeah, how does that 24/7 lifestyle affect very basic things like relationships? How have you seen that play out in your research, Dan?
Well, one thing that struck me is that the kind of Saturday night date night doesn't seem to be the thing anymore. For longer through people's lives, they're working Saturday nights and other things get in the way, and we have things like Tinder and other such things on our telephones. So relationships are built, you know, in the gaps between these busy lives in a new way. So you find these moments to hang together, and it might be a Monday morning, you know, at 9 o'clock. One of the good things about doing shift work is if you work Sunday night, you're allowed to have a whiskey or a drink at 9 a.m. on Monday morning when the rest of us can't.
There is someone who actually listens to my show, my Double J show, and they work a shift and they, on a Friday morning, get home and they've said to me, I've, you know, cracked open the bottle of rosé and I've got the chips. It's 9 a.m. But to them, that's the end of their working.
It's 9 p.m. Friday night for them.
Yeah. Rosé for breakfast. It's quite disarming.
We are discussing the 24/7 world and the change that this has had on not only our working week but our personal lives as well. Dan Woodman is with me, a professor of sociology, and broadcaster Zan Rowe. Both have got very interesting perspectives on all of this. Does distance play a role here too in terms of relationships and this 24/7 world? We can live vast distances from our family and friends because we all move around so easily. So often the only time we can call our family is 11 p.m. on a Tuesday. How has this changed, like, family relationships?
Well, we are more mobile than we used to be, and it's wonderful to have these new relatively cheap technologies. So you don't have to get that horrible letter in the mail saying that your grandfather died 6 weeks ago. Like if we go back far enough in time,
that's
Skype
true.
Is a wonderful thing to be able to get on and talk at all times. But it is one more thing that whether it's at work or home, as people are spread around the world or working with people in other parts of the world, you start doing things that you might have once done regularly at a particular time, you know, family lunch on Sunday, every Sunday, or meeting with your colleagues at 5 p.m. on a, or 3:30 on a Thursday now becomes 9 p.m. because you're meeting somebody in London and you're calling your family at, 11 a.m. on Tuesday, possibly.
I find that technology has helped me a great deal in my relationships, particularly with my friends, because I'm originally from Melbourne. That's where all my kind of oldest friends are from. And I've been living in Sydney for about 12, 13 years. And every time I'd get down quite regularly to Melbourne, but every time I would catch up, it was sort of this sort of weight of everything at once and, you know, a huge amount to catch up on. But in the last couple of years, we started a WhatsApp group called Core Crew with all of us. And we just check in with each other here and there, talk about what's going on, share things. things that are just, you wouldn't normally save up for that conversation, but it just connects you with their daily life. And that has just been such a godsend, not only in connecting on flippant things that make, you know, make us laugh, but also really just having a sense of what's happening in each other's lives, despite the fact that, that we're living, you know, thousands of kilometres away. And that's been an amazing gift for me.
It's like social media without the performance element.
It's exactly, because it's a private endeavour. You know, WhatsApp is something that's just, there's six of us in this group and no one's publishing anything. You're not putting on a face. In fact, you can actually just check in and say, oh, hey, I just need to, you know, need some grounding, need someone to give me a call or whatever. And it is just like having that regular catch up, but it's always available. It's always in our pocket. We don't have to schedule a time, have a regular meetup, find a moment to grab dinner together. We're just always there for each other. Yeah. And I think this is a way that being on and being connected is really helpful.
Got some texts here I'd like to read, and feel free, slip us one. 0467 921 222 is the text line, and you can call 1300 800 222 as well. Someone's written, the French actually legalised the right to switch off recently, which they did. You don't have to check your emails when you are not at work. And someone else has said, I like the way they do things in France. They close for lunch, you enjoy your food, have a break. Dan, are we seeing a return to these traditional ways of switching off, in, or do we have to start setting up some more traditional ways of switching off, do you think, within our society, so that we do actually get a break like this?
Yeah, so particularly in Europe, there's various slow movements around the world, you know, to do things slowly again. But the reason we have those things, I think, is they're pushing against the tide in some ways. I don't think it's going to be possible to go back to the way we used to do things.
And damn,
the
thing about I was banking on that siesta, Dan.
Well,
dinner at 11.
Well, there might be special rules for you, Miff, and I think that would be, everybody would completely accept that. But you know,
so.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that one way or another, I think we're all trying to find little strategies to, you know, find those moments where either on our own or together we can have some time out. And that's one of the great things about podcasts or Netflix is you don't have to be off in front of the TV like you did to catch the latest episode of Seinfeld or Friends. It's, you know, someone can get their glass of rosé 9 a.m. Monday morning and put on a bang on podcast and catch up.
That is actually the serving session suggestion, Dan, so well done.
That's fantastic. Look, this is interesting. Hi, Miff. I find this conversation about 24/7 work degrading. It degrades families. It degrades downtime. It degrades friendship. And I think it helps to create a huge class difference. It seems that retail, hospitality and entertainment workers are doing most of the 24/7 work just to survive. Government and office workers wouldn't dare trade their weekends or afternoon hours just to keep their jobs or to appease another working demographic. That's from Peter.
I think that's a really fair point. And again, I go back to this, you know, standard that's been set by banks where it's not budging. You know, it's always open at 9:30 to 4:30. Post office is the same. There's certain things that we just accept those opening hours will never change. And yet, particularly with trading and restaurants, there's also an expectation that they'll be completely flexible around our needs. Why does it, yeah, is there one rule for one group and another for the other, you know?
Yeah, and the cutting of penalty rates on a Sunday recently, I think, indicates that to many people, Sunday is important to them, but not if you work it.
I think that it's really, you know, overwhelmingly, the society and Australian society operates around a daytime economy in terms of things being open. So if you have to work outside of those norms that the majority is operating within, then you should be compensated, absolutely.
Dan, in your line of work and from your research as a professor of sociology, what have you seen? Are there two different worlds living? Is one a group living in the 24/7 and the world, and are the rest of us who are not in, say, hospitality or in entertainment and in service, are the rest of us just in reaping the rewards of that?
Absolutely, that's a big part of it. So a lot of us are not working just at standard 9 to 5, but some of us are going beyond that very much on our own terms, have a lot of autonomy about when we do things and actual flexibility on our terms. And that's what makes a difference. If you don't have that, then you miss out on things. Yeah, so penalty rates were reduced partly because of this idea that Sundays weren't sacred anymore. But, you know, the weekends and evenings, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday are still – when most of the footy games happen. There's the occasional game on Thursday. It's when grandma's birthday is inevitably going to be scheduled. You know, people aren't going to get together with grandma to celebrate the 90th at 11
on a Tuesday
a.m.
morning.
On Tuesday.
No.
Yeah.
It's true. Hey, we've got a call here, Dan and Zan, if you've got your headphones on. Hello, Joe.
Yeah, hi, guys. Look, I work incredibly long hours as a medical specialist, but I think it's really important to preserve the 9-to-5 for those people who can't afford to be away from home all those hours, because otherwise young people or people who can, you know, work any hours of the day for any length of time can take the jobs of people who need those jobs. For example, if you've got a 55 or 60-year-old person working in a manufacturing job or some other job where they need to, you know, be at home by 6 o'clock and they've got the 9-to-5 job, they need to have those jobs available, because if they're all changed from, like, you know, 12-hour shifts, 7-to-7, then perhaps someone who doesn't have the family commitments, who doesn't have kids, who's not looking after somebody, is going to waltz in and take those jobs. So I think at some level you still need to have a unionised workforce where people can have their jobs protected in that 9-to-5 environment. Otherwise, those people can be just exploited out of the workforce by, you know, just opportunists who can work for as long as they want for as little pay as they want. That will be the next thing.
I love that you've just lumped those who are single and don't have children as opportunists there, Joe.
No, the issue is that we're all working longer, but we're not getting paid more to do it. And so, you know, if you're a uni student who's got a 3-month break, you can work 6 a.m. till 10 p.m. every day.
Yeah, but you might have other. Look, I think you make a fair point, but let's not think that just because people don't have children or dependents that they don't actually have children or dependents or other commitments. I think that's a bit of a gross generalisation. But Joe, I do understand your point, and you're right. But maybe we do need to consider some more traditional parameters for this, so people don't get exploited.
Well, I've been in this situation when I was a uni student, and they said to me, look, just come to work and work for as long as you want. And I thought this was fantastic. I got paid a lot of money. But the union came in and said, look, this is unfair, because there are people out there who need to be able to have a standard 7-to-3 job. And by you working 6-to-6, it's actually removing their competitiveness in trying to get a job with you. And I thought, at the time I resented it, but as I've gotten older, I can see the point of that.
Yep, all right. Thank you for your thoughts, Joe. Appreciate it. Someone's written here, I'm a 24/7 worker and I work for the government. So that's another interesting angle. Another is critical of all of us. This conversation is so far removed from reality. Most people are wiring in blue-collar or service industries, juggling shifts that give them penalty rates so they can make ends meet, or chasing more work because they are underemployed. Have some real conversations, says Lee. I feel like we're having pretty real conversations and trying to talk about the many aspects of the 24/7 world, and lots of different viewpoints. I love it. Thank you for sending them through. Text line is 0467 921222. And another one here says, Zan, you're an absolute machine. You work all the time, and this person has even DM'd you via Instagram about a song that you played on Triple J, and you replied, you're an absolute saint.
Yeah, I speaking of the 24-hour work life, I started my morning on ABC News, kicked off a show on Double J this morning, came to you, and then I'm going to go and film something after this. So it never ends, and I'll probably be working. I will be working later on tonight when I go and review a show. So I think that there's a plurality of different roles. I think there's plenty of people who work shift work and get paid, plenty of people who have more flexible work life, and that sometimes backfires on you when you don't have the limitations and you can't set them yourself, or maybe an employer takes advantage of you. But it's good to explore so many different perspectives with you today, Miff.
Well, this is another angle on it. Regarding a previous text, this is from someone on the text line, about discrimination of 24/7 working being hospitality-centric. As a former chef and now a public servant, let me tell you, I work more unpaid hours in the public service than I ever did in hospitality. So many different angles on this topic. It is fascinating. How do you navigate your way through this, Dan Woodman, as a professor of sociology?
Well, I think your callers are all making very, very good points. They're thinking like sociologists to a large extent. So they're really, really, power makes a big difference, and how we deal with this is not to kind of focus on individuals and the choices they make, but setting the parameters around legislation and what we allow and what we don't allow. And there's lots of Australians doing shift work that's very tough, you know, particularly if you're on those kind of rolling 24-hour patterns where you can work mornings for a couple of weeks, then afternoons, then night times. It impacts on relationships and health and all kinds of things. But also teachers and public servants, these people who, for a lot of us, we think they're kind of doing these cushy hours. More and more, their work life is seeping outside that 9-to-5 limits as well. And as we've talked about a few times, what that means is that somebody's got to do the work to keep everything else going. So make sure everyone gets fed. The kids, if you have kids, get picked up from school, because that's one place in our system where there's not a lot of flexibility still. Yeah. You've got to get your kids or they shut the gate, and your kid will be very, very angry at you.
So true. Hey, thank you both. Thanks, for Mitch, sharing your thoughts on the 24/7 world. Zan Rowe, presenter on Double J Mornings and also Bang On, and sociologist of youth, young adulthood and generations at the University of Melbourne, Dan Woodman. Thank you both.
Thank you, Miff. Thanks, Dan.
Fascinating conversation. Lots to think about on that.